everyone, and welcome back to the Icy Veins podcast. My name is Patrick Beja, and we cover all of the news from all of the Blizzard games. That means WoW Endgame is starting, Hearthstone is solidifying in its meta and its expansion, Heroes has new characters, well, a new character, and Overwatch has a short. Actually, we have external media for three of the four games we're going to be talking about today, and to help me do that and more, we have Stan and Aleko here with me. This is becoming the trusty trio. It's like, ooh, I like this alliteration. We should have an adjective in there. An additional one, like the trusty toasty trio, or no, toasty doesn't work. What do you
I'm
guys
trying
think?
To think of a word that is as a synonym for nerd that starts with T. But I'm drawing a blank right now.
Damn it. If you have any suggestions, please let us know in the comments of the episode or on Twitter. Or maybe don't, because I suspect it might frighten us. all right. And Stan, are you okay? Doing well?
Yeah, of course. It's been a busy week because today in Europe as well, we had most of the endgame content launch. And it's live, so we've had a lot of work to do to cover it and also update the guides.
Yeah, it's basically endgame season now. The expansion has been out for 3 weeks, and everything has started. And I guess it's only fair that we start with WoW. And before we talk about the endgame, I guess the one thing to discuss is the new animation, Warbringers Ashara, which is finally here and confirms that there are indeed old gods in the expansion, or at least one. It's Nazoth. We knew it, and now we have the animated short to confirm it. We kind of were expecting it, hoping for it a few weeks earlier, but they saved it until endgame, almost endgame would start, or basically they saved it for Gamescom to make the event there a little bit more palatable or a little bit bigger. What did you guys think about Warbringers Ashara? I guess I'll ask Stan first.
I think it was probably the best of the Warbringers series. I don't know. Really? I mean, I really loved Sylvanas, and after that, I would put Warbringers Ashara in the second spot.
Really? Oh, wow. I thought it was nice. I probably like it better than Sylvanas, although they might be both equally good, but I definitely put Jaina in first spot. Her Warbringer is so engrossing. I thought it, but you know, I'm Alliance, so she speaks to me more.
Yes, I love the music, but I didn't really like her animated short that much.
But with all the story and her father and the imagery in it, oh my god, I could not disagree with you more on that one. But okay, did you see it, Aleko? I know you're not into WoW, but Nazoth is in Hearthstone as well.
That's true. No, I didn't see. I didn't see that one. I did see the Jaina one, though. I thought that one was pretty good.
Okay,
I'll have to check out this one.
Yeah, you do. She's basically in the middle of trying to save her city when she's making deals with Sargeras, which everyone should know. It's basically Sargeras is WoW Satan, so you shouldn't try to make deals with Sargeras. He will trick you, and you will not come out a winner in it. And indeed, she doesn't until she gets submerged and Nazoth appears. And I think the direction of the actually directing of the short is really good. The use of music, the use of silences, and the darkness of the screen when she's basically starting to drown, and her pride in saying I am a queen, and when she says, you know, when she goes magnificent, it kind of reminds me of Warlock Gul'dan saying everything. It's kind of like the same thing that you'll remember. And then she tells him the god of nothing, and she corners him and plays him at his own game. I think it establishes her character pretty well. I like that part. But so you really liked it, Stan. That's cool. What did you like the fish? Is the fish?
Yeah, I love the fish. I'm a simple man. I just love the fish, you know.
Yeah, I like how the fish initially is like completely ridiculous.
I really love the part when they revealed the whole old god, you know, when Nazav became visible. So I really love that as well.
When you have like the eye of the fish and then he gets angry and all of the eyes appear.
And the claws and how big he is.
And the city at the bottom of the sea as well was like, I am a god. And you have all of the eyes and the city that is revealed that had been there all along. It's pretty good. I really like that. So yeah, a good short. I would recommend it. I mean, it has value in itself, but of course, in the context of the game, it's even more interesting. So I wonder how much you'll like it, Aleko. You'll let us know next time. But obviously, the bigger news is the fact that a huge part of the endgame content has been unlocked in the game. And that means that we now have the raid, Uldir, which is available in normal and heroic. You have Mythic Plus, plus zero dungeons that are open. And you have the, world bosses, all of that. And the war fronts that are also available. So a ton of things to do with the end game of WoW, and you don't have to just keep leveling alts if WoW is all you do. I didn't get a chance to play any of this because I've been traveling and my baby doesn't let me play WoW. Because it's been a challenge. But I'm really looking forward to war fronts. Most of all, because it's the one entirely new feature for the end game, if you discount the islands exploration, the island expeditions that have been available from the beginning. But what do you think, Stan? Have you been playing Endgame WoW?
Yes. So I've been running a couple of Mythic Plus dungeons, given that they had a really disastrous launch yesterday, the system. And I've also been actually I haven't been playing Warfronts. I just completed the quest that you need to donate.
But you played it in beta, right?
Yeah, I've played it, but I just finished on live the horde quests that are now available, that you need to donate certain materials and resources in order for your faction to attack the Warfront, because it's now in possession of the Alliance first. So
right, so it starts, so the Alliance can do the Warfront, has the Warfront initially, and so that means you have some world quests and bosses and things to do in Arathi Highlands, and in, what is it, a couple of weeks, the Horde will be able to do...
It's actually 3 days, so...
Oh, is it just 3 days?
Yeah.
Does it flip?
I mean, the Horde is at 25% right now, and we're just 1 day.
Okay. So I guess everyone's focusing on this because everyone wants to try and do it. But it takes maximum, I think, a couple of weeks. But now it's going to go fast. And I guess after that, the Alliance will flip it again relatively fast. And just so you know, in order to flip the Warfront and to enable the actual Warfront mode, which is the attack on Stormguard, you don't need to do it per server. It's per region. Just like it was on the Broken Isles, and you know, all of those systems have been per region recently. So if your faction is lower on your server, it doesn't really matter.
It's still a region-wide effort.
Yeah. That will be enjoyable, I'm sure. What about the? You mentioned you were running some Mythic Plus. Did you find they were different from the previous one or from Legion? Or are they, you know, I know there are some new affixes that can change things a little bit. Or is it really the same thing with the new dungeons?
So you need to get used to the new dungeons. But I think some of them are pretty good and some of them are going to be more difficult. For example, I cannot even imagine doing Motherlode on Mythic Plus. That
really
will be a nightmare. But dungeons like, I don't know, Underrod, etc., are going to be really good. So you just need to get used to it, to the packs, know what to dispel, when to stun your opponents and stuff like that. So it's certainly going to take time, but nothing unusual.
Okay. And the new affixes, are they different? Are they fun? Are they good? Do you recommend people try them out?
There are no new affixes, just Tyrannical and Fortified have been moved to tier one.
But I thought they were, am I mistaken? I thought they created new affixes. Maybe it's for
There is one higher. Seasonal affix at level 10 that activates. Okay, yeah. But aside from that, there is nothing new. Just these two affixes have been moved to level one. So
okay.
you will receive either one of them at your Mythic Keystone level two.
And there were a couple of things that happened. The launch wasn't the smoothest, as you mentioned. But, you know, that's, I think, to be expected when you unlock that many systems. They do have the resources, but it's also an immensely complex game. So I think 24 hours to fix things, I wouldn't fault them too much. If it's a kind of thing that, you know, persists for weeks and weeks, then that's a different issue. But yeah, anyway, so Gahoon has been killed. That's the end boss of the first raid. He's been killed in heroic mode. So you have a video available on the site if you want to see how that went. I mean, that's to be expected. It always happens. There's a couple of guilds that kill everything because they've trained in the beta so much. But if you are still doing progression, keep in mind that there are the class guides on the site have been updated, and there's a boss per boss detail for every class. So the talents you need, the strategy, and all of that is available on the site in the class guides. So if you're looking for that, it's available there. There were a couple of things that we could discuss as well that were semi-controversial in the last 2 weeks in the game. There was an issue with mob scaling where people were discussing. So what's happening there? Let me explain it. The power gain in every MMO, and including at max level, is so that you will kill mobs faster and faster as you progress and you get higher eye-level gear. That's pretty normal. But the issue was, if you progress at the normal rate, then you end up one-shotting the mobs super quickly. And that becomes a little bit too fast. The time to kill a mob is almost becomes super trivial. So what they did in Legion was that they introduced mob scaling, where as you would get more powerful, the mobs would get more hit points as well. So you wouldn't just explode all of them in half a second if you were too high eye level. And they progress, but they progress slower than you. So you always kill them faster, but you don't kill them as fast as you would if they just kept the same hit points level that they had when you just reached max level. And some people were a little bit angry about this. There were a couple of instances where with some specific mobs, it would be more profitable for you to unequip some items to lower your eye level and you would kill the mobs faster, but that was super localized. And of course, the community being what it is, they got super angry and made this into a lot more than what it was. But I, for one, completely understand the design decision. If you end up, you know, when your level, eye level, I don't know, 340, you explode every mob in the world quests in half a second, then it's really not, there's no substance to the game anymore. So, of course, you should never take longer to kill a mob than you did when you were a lower level. That I completely agree, but that has to be managed. The time it takes to kill a mob has to be managed. And that's what they're doing with the mob scaling. And that's what they did in Legion as well, because, of course, with the world quest system, you keep killing the same mobs that you did when you were leveling and when you first reached the max level. So that introduces a new issue in the game that didn't exist before, and they solved it in Legion that way, and I think it worked in Legion. So I thought there was a little bit of artificial controversy in that discussion in the community in the past few days. Of course, the issues, the instances where you had to, where you could unequip some items and be more efficient were not intended, and those are being fixed or have been fixed as well. There's a couple of other fixes. Island expeditions now have increased drop rates on some items. The Azurite gear, that was a big one, is now tradable. So that is something that was a little bit frustrating, and deservedly so, I think. In that case, the community was unhappy that you couldn't trade Azurite gear, and now you can. So that was a design they changed. And they also fixed, or attempted to fix the auction house issue that made it super slow because a million people or many million people decided to were posting one item at a time. And so now the deposit is dependent on the price of the item and not just a unitary amount. So it costs more if you post, maybe I'm getting the math wrong, but it costs more if you post one item stack 200 times than if you post a 200 item stack. And that hopefully is fixing the auction house slowness issue that we've had since the beginning. There's a couple of other issues here and there that are being worked on or that have been fixed. But any comment on any of those, Stan?
Well, so for instance, as for Island Expeditions, I'm not really sure if those rates have indeed increased because I've yet to finish my weekly quest. So I've done it for 2 weeks now. I mean, this will be the third week that I complete the weekly quest, but I have yet to receive any toys, gear, or items from Island Expeditions. I still have not received any toys, mounts, or whatever.
Yeah, I think that was the issue. People were frustrated because it wasn't dropping at all. So hopefully now it will work a little bit better. I think the bigger thing is the Azeroth gear being tradable.
That's a great change, yeah.
Yeah.
Because I'm really, on my runs, I have had like eye level 340 gear already equipped from World Quest and Emissary Rewards, and it really was bad when I was not able to trade it with other guys or players that were in my runs. So yeah. Having fixed this is really great also toward gearing, so you can give the item you already have to your friend.
Yeah, exactly. I think that was really a mistake on their part. I think the way they explained it was, well, it's a complex system. You don't know what is in the, you know, talent, the internal talent setup of the item, and it will be complicated. But I think that was definitely misunderstanding how people would get it immediately. So that's a good change. There's a couple of other things that I think we can skip. The waste of time has been found. That's the first secret that has been found. The WoW secret Discord and Reddit communities are actively looking for a bunch of things. I think that is about it for WoW. As I said, I haven't had time to do any of this yet, but I'm really looking forward to trying the war fronts is the thing I really want to try. So, and the other thing is, of course, next week, the Raid Finder version of the raid is starting. So that will happen. That is when I will start doing the raid because I'm a noob and I don't have a raiding guild. So I'll be raid finding and having fun with those. Although, I started with the mage this expansion, and I'm wondering how long I'm going to have to wait to play in Raid Finder. Although the ratio of DPS and the fact that it's adaptable to the number of players that are in the raid might alleviate that. In the previous expansions, I was just playing Druid, so I would get in immediately as a healer, but we'll see how it goes in this one. So that's it for World of Warcraft. Let's talk about Hearthstone. Aleko, is anything happening in Hearthstone? I think there is a comic, which I'm not too sure about. Did you like it?
I wasn't the biggest fan, personally. I wouldn't call these like must-read content for Hearthstone fans, but you know, if you've got a few minutes to spare. There's just things you can do. I thought the ending, I don't know if we're supposed to talk about spoilers or not, but the ending wasn't that satisfactory to me.
I won't comment more because I'm not playing Hearthstone much, but I think, you know, overall, I think they did a few really interesting things with Hearthstone lore over the past couple of years, but it seems they aren't really following through. And maybe it's because the Dr. Boom experimental science thing doesn't really speak to me, or I don't know. The comics specifically, there's two or three of them now for this expansion, and I never found them very enticing. But maybe it's me they don't speak to.
I think they did an excellent job with like the theming of the set in terms of like making all these characters and giving all these sweet names to stuff. But yeah, I think they didn't tie together all those characters into some kind of like greater story in an amazing way. But that's not really what the function is of Hearthstone, or anyways, the function of Hearthstone is to make some sweet card game action happen. So why don't we talk about that a little bit as far as like what the state of the game is?
Sure. Quest Rogue.
Yep. Quest Rogue's back, baby. Back on the menu, everyone. I know everyone's favorite deck here, and by that I mean probably the most controversial deck that I can remember in Hearthstone, at least since I've started playing it. It was nerfed once. It had its quest requirement increased from 4 to 5, and then it was nerfed again during the Witchwood. And it had all the minions being made from 5/5s.
Wait, now can you explain the mechanics of the card again? Because some people, me, might not know exactly what it is.
Of course, yeah. So a quest is a card that was introduced during Journey to Un'Goro. There's a quest for each class. And the one for Rogue, all the quests start in your opening hand, guaranteed. They're guaranteed to be in your opening hand if you put it in your deck. And they're a legendary card. So, of course, there's only one of them per deck. The quest for Quest Rogue started out as play 4 minions of the same name. So that means you can use like bounce effects to return them to your hand, or maybe there's some minions that you can just get more than one copy of. Like you could do that with Flame Elementals off of like Firefly and Igneous Elemental. That was the original Quest Rogue. So it was to play 4 minions of the same name, and then you would get a spell called Crystal Core, which costs 5 mana and turns all of your minions into 5/5s for the rest of the game. When that was first like kind of spoiled, people thought it was going to be really bad because they thought it was going to be too hard to complete the quest. But pretty quickly, people realized it wasn't that hard. And it even got to the point where it was a bit too powerful. So they nerfed it from the quest requirement being 4 minions of the same name to 5 minions of the same name. But then more cards got printed. Some of those were really, really good for Quest Rogue. And so the fact that the quest requirement went up was really not a significant change. It was still very, very good in the matchups it was very, very good in before, and still bad in the matchups that it was bad in before. Namely, it was good against control decks, and it was very bad against aggro decks. The nerf didn't really change that. So they had to nerf it again. They made it so that instead of making everything 5/5s, it makes everything 4/4s. And then now we're back to the exact same spot. Both nerfs haven't really significantly changed the texture of what this deck does. It is harder to complete the quest. Your minions are smaller after you complete the quest, but it's still really, really good. You know, nigh impossible to beat this as a control deck, dare I say, unless you play very well or have some things really, really break your way. It's still not the best against aggro. So it kind of leads to this debate or this problem within the Hearthstone community where people are kind of frustrated that the matchups are so polarizing from this deck. You know, I think I would say the general spread of matchups people want to see in the ladder is somewhere in like the, you know, 60-40% range. Like, you know, maybe you have like a 60% chance to win if you're favored. But Quest Rogue has historically presented a number of matchups where it, like 90-10 style matchups, 80-20 style matchups, which are a little bit outside that range. So even if the deck isn't too powerful, it feels bad for a lot of people.
So basically, the issue is if you come against a deck that you are good against, you're going to win almost no matter what. And if you come against a deck that you're not good against, then it's kind of you've lost before you've even started. That is not great.
Yeah, so that's why they nerfed it the first two times, is basically for that reason, so that, you know, it could just kind of not so that it would make those matchups better, but just so that it wouldn't be played really, and kind of, you know, fix some of the problems that were going on in the ladder. And it's back with a vengeance this time, thanks to Giggling Inventor, which is really the only new card from the expansion that it's running. And Giggling Inventor is a card, I think I might have mentioned it the last show, which is seeing play everywhere. So it's a 5-mana 2/1, not very exciting, but it makes 2 Annoyatrons. That's its battle cry.
Oh, I'm annoyed already. Annoyatrons are super annoying indeed.
It's not hello, hello. It's hello, 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 hello from this one. So in Quest Rogue, when you can bounce stuff, return stuff back to your hand and play it again, you're making all the Annoyatrons, all of them. Mm. And they're 4/4s. They're taunting, they're divine shielding, and they're very, very annoying. So it makes the deck better against aggro. There's a lot of games where you're kind of, shouldn't be winning, but Giggling Inventor makes them winnable. But it's not, Giggling Inventor isn't really just getting played in Quest Rogue widely. It's getting played everywhere. Aggro decks are running it. Combo decks like Quest Rogue are running it. Control decks are running it as a way to kind of bridge the gap between like these mid game turns where they're getting beat down to the later game turns. This would be the first card that I expect to get nerfed. Maybe Quest Rogue isn't going to get nerfed. Maybe. Maybe they just are going to nerf Giggling Inventor because the play rates for this card are kind of off the charts right now.
It's so funny.
We'll see how that shakes out.
Yeah, it's the kind of card. I mean, I'm sure no one thought it was bad, but I'm sure no one thought it would see that much play either before it was actually the expansion actually arrived. And things, you know, shook up a little bit or settled down a little bit a few weeks down the line. It's really interesting to see people trying to make predictions, or maybe I'm wrong and everyone knew it was going to be great. But usually people try to make predictions, and until you actually try it in the game, no matter how well you know the game and how good you are and how well you understand the interactions, usually it takes actually playing it to understand which is the one card that everyone's going to be playing. That's interesting.
No, that's absolutely right. I think a lot of people were expecting Giggling Inventor to be a good card because it was very clearly like a lot of stats and abilities for the mana cost. But I don't think anyone's expecting it to see quite this much play, or at least the ability to see play in so many different kinds of distinct archetypes, which is what I think makes this card kind of like a potential nerf target. I think when you see a card's allowed to be good in aggro decks, or a card can definitely be good in control decks, but when it's good in aggro decks and control decks and combo decks, then you might have kind of a problem there.
Indeed.
So something I just wanted to mention really quickly, and maybe toot my own predictive abilities horn in here that came out really awkwardly. Wow. Was when Journey to Un'Goro was kind of getting wrapped up, I wrote an article which was talking about like the things that, you know, the set did right, the things that set did wrong. And I came down really, really hard on quests. I bashed them super hard. I said that the game design principle of making it so that you're guaranteed to have a card in your opening hand just puts so many restrictions on the kinds of cards that you're allowed to make in Hearthstone in the first place. When you're guaranteed to find a card at the beginning of the game, especially something that has such a powerful effect, you kind of remove this element from card games where you're not guaranteed to find what you're looking for every single time, where the more powerful the combos that you have, you know, and the more guaranteed that you are to find these combos, you can get to some really kind of polarizing matchups and just awkward spots. And that's kind of what's happening here. When half of the combo for Quest Rogue is to have the quest and to be able to play that early, and the other half is to bounce stuff, you're just putting this huge restriction on design space going forward as far as the kind of cards that you're even allowed to print, only because you've made it so that you have these cards that are in your hand at the beginning of every single game. Right. So that was a design I was very critical of a while ago, and I think we're kind of seeing that pan out now. There's the quest for Rogue has really been the only quest that's really been in any way, shape, or form problematic. The other quests have been pretty balanced, but that's because the power level is just, you know, quite a bit lower on kind of the effects that the other quests are providing.
Interesting. So it's not just that the card itself is difficult to balance, or the design is lopsided, but it also, as you mentioned, affects the rest of your strategy for your character or the card design, because you know that part you're always going to have no matter what at the beginning of the game. So it kind of takes care of half of the uncertainty already. So it does affect not just that card, but the rest of it as well. So
yeah, exactly.
It's interesting.
So enough about Quest Rogue. I'm sure people are tired of hearing about Quest Rogue. The last thing I guess I'll say as far as Hearthstone news goes is that we had the Europe playoffs for Season 2 here on the HCC Tour. So we had four players emerging through that very stacked field. We had Renmin, Moyen, Hatul. I think I'm saying these names right. A lot of these are kind of up-and-comers. And then the big name from the group, which was Sintalol. We had Hunter Ace in the tournament, who has been this year on arguably, and maybe not even arguably at this point, just factually, the best run in professional Hearthstone history. He has been making the finals or has been winning these HCT Tour stops back to back to back to back, just constantly winning everything he's in. And he even made the top eight of this tournament. To make through to the seasonal playoffs, you need to make the top four. So he didn't quite make it out on that top four. He did make it to the top eight, but he did become the first player in this tournament to crack a a 2-star rating for the Masters system, which is a system that they implemented at the beginning of this year, wherein the more points you acquire through playing these tournaments, after you hit certain thresholds, you're going to get more like salary, I guess, from Blizzard for being a pro Hearthstone player. So he became the very first person to not only crack the 1-star rating, but also the 2-star rating, and he did it at this tournament. So that was pretty exciting.
That's, you know, it's my feeling, looking at it from afar, it feels like the Hearthstone top pro players scene is a little bit unstable. I'm not sure anyone has won the BlizzCon tournament twice in a row, or you see the same faces every once in a while, but overall there's a lot of turnover, not because they stop playing, but because they don't win as much. And so first, I guess the first question is that actually the case? And second, is that player, can you say his name again?
Is he Hunter Ace.
Hunter Ace. So is he the first player that we can expect to see being on top of the top on a regular basis?
So I guess I would compare Hearthstone, I guess, to something like golf, maybe. Like where you see at these tournaments, you'll get like people that really consistently place, like, you know, in the top ranks, or are able to hold this sort of like number one rank overall for a long period of time because of how consistently they've been performing. But that on any given day at any given tournament, it's very difficult to create a recreatable sort of result over and over and over and over again in a game like this, which is why it's so remarkable when you see someone like Hunter Ace, you know, making the finals of, I think, definitely consecutive HCT Tour stops, winning one of them. You know, I don't want to quote numbers because I don't remember, but he's been in the finals or in the top 16 of so many of these. He's significantly far ahead of the rest of the pack. It's like the second place player in the world isn't close. So whenever you see something like that, you can definitely say, well, there's something going on here. This guy's cracked a code, or he's doing something very clearly that other players haven't. But yeah, you know, like I said, it's a little hard to replicate results like this over and over and over again in a game where there is a degree of variance into it.
So the good players are good, as you said, like in golf, because they place well consistently, but not necessarily, you know, win every tournament they're in.
So. Yeah, you need to set the bar a little lower than winning these big tournaments. Yeah. And that's the same for other kinds of competitive card games as well. When the bar or the metric for success is probably somewhere closer to make top 16, because at that point you're getting you know, prize money, you're coming away with that with some of those precious HCT points. So being able to basically make top 16 over and over and over again would be something equivalent, like maybe like a team in a team sport winning a tournament over and over and over again. That is a greater measure of consistency.
All right. Well, cool. I look forward to hearing more about the nerfing of Giggling Inventor in the coming weeks. All right. So let's move on to Heroes. And I guess there are two things happening in Heroes. Mephisto is now available to play, and Hanamura has been redesigned. And I think, Stan, tell me if I'm mistaken, but there's only one payload now in the map, right?
Yeah, so there have been a lot of quality of life improvements made to Hanamura, and now it has returned. So just to name a few, the objective has now shifted, as you mentioned, from two different payloads to a single contested one. Another thing to include is that the core has been opened up for direct attacks, so enabling various other strategies that were not previously available.
Do you need to take down some towers before you can attack the core?
Yes, definitely. It works like on other maps. So, for example, if you win the objective, the payload, it will first attack structures if they are available before the core. So it works pretty much like on other maps besides Towers of Doom, I think.
Before, correct me if I'm wrong, but before that, the core, you couldn't attack it directly at all. You had to take the payload to...
You had to win the payloads, and they would just fire, like Towers of Doom, where you get the altars and you get directly shot at your core, you know?
I see. So now you have, I guess, before the options were which payload do you go for, and now it's a more traditional, do you go for the payload, or at some point if you've taken down the towers, you go for the core directly. That yes. makes sense.
So
yeah.
There are plenty of other changes. For example, the payload, if it's left unattended by your team, it will no longer drift backwards, but will instead remain in its current position. So you can just return to the location and fight over it again.
Okay, I see. I guess that makes it... I wonder why Towers of Doom works and this one doesn't. I'm guessing it was the intent was to make another map where you didn't have to go for the core directly, but I guess it didn't work out quite as they hoped. But
I think I remember Hanamura in its current state before it was removed, and it was really chaotic. You know, you've got five team members, and there was just too much going on at the same time. And thanks to this, it enables more strategies, and it's more clear what to do at which stages of the game. I mean, different stages of the game.
Okay, so it's more focused. I can see how that would be beneficial. All right, cool. Anything to say about Mephisto? We talked about him last time, but now
we talked about him last week, right? And the patch also comes with a Taranda rework, and we have both build guides updated on our website, so definitely check out the hero section.
Cool. So Mephisto is available, and Taranda is reworked, so go check that out. And finally, we have Overwatch. Overwatch, and we have a pretty nice. I'm losing my words. CG movie animation, the D.Va one. That is always a joy for Overwatch. I have to say that one wasn't my favorite one. It was cool, but I think I've always thought D.Va was a little bit too cutesy. She's cool to play, but she's like Gigi. I think the voice make her sound a bit too childish, and she's a little bit. She's supposed to be an adult. I think she's really geared towards a little bit of an anime cutesy character, which is not necessarily my jam. But the short itself is kind of cool. Some mecha and kaiju type action. D.Va is defending the city. Always super beautiful. The Blizzard animations always are. Aleko, I know you're also a fan of Overwatch. What did you think of this one? Surely that one you've seen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, we talked about this one a little bit last week, right? The
oh, did we? Oh, crap. Okay. Yeah. I didn't. Oh, we did. I didn't have my notes set up correctly. So we did watch the short and we talked about it last week. Excellent. Mm-hmm. It was fun. It was fine. Fine.
But one thing I will add on the D.Va front is like the cutesy GGs and stuff. They do make for like a stronger taunting experience to your opponent. when you drop that on them, it's like a little more, it feels a little more personal. Than, you know, someone like a straight-faced maybe McCree going like GG, right? And so that is important as a D.Va player, right? I'm doing it less for the sort of cutesy appeal and a lot more for the so more cerebral one, if that makes sense.
Right. Yes. No. It's completely mind games that you're playing. You kill someone and you go GG, and they obviously get more angry and play worse. On their next try. So yeah, strong.
It's very strategic. Yeah. It's kind of hard to understand sometimes, but these things are very important in competitive Overwatch.
So did you complete the D.Va Nano Cola challenge?
I did. I actually thought I had less time to do it than I did. I think I read like 9 hours left instead of something like 9 days left. So I got home really so late. I was like, oh no. Just played like 4 hours of free for all matches. So I didn't check out the rewards before I did that. The rewards are kind of, they're more on like the sprays side.
Yeah.
Of things. There's like, I think there's one like kind of, it's a pretty tame. It's not a super exciting skin at the end of the rewards. But if you're a D.Va fan, you'll want to do it. If you're not really a D.Va fan, then you're probably not going to miss out on too much.
But or you just want to cool do it because you want everything. That's also a possibility.
Yeah. Or a completionist, of course. But they're doing something really cool, which is they're implementing drops for Hearthstone, Overwatch streams. So variety of streamers have enabled drops on Twitch, where you can unlock some sprays for D.Va by watching them over the next week or so. So that's just like a nice little incentive to, if you're already watching Overwatch streams, to get a little reward. And if you're not, then it might be something worth checking out.
Yeah, that's a cool new aspect of it. What I like even more is that not necessarily the Nano Cola challenge in itself, but the idea that they're basically implementing the challenge as an overarching, because so we've always had in the arcade mode, if you win every three matches you win, you get one loot box and you can get three of them. And that is exclusive to the arcade mode. But this, the challenge is overarching for all of the game. So any mode you play, if you win three, you get the first reward and then 3 second reward and etc. for the three reward tiers. And I really like it because I think it's a fun way of implementing a reward system for the game, and they could use it for other things. I'm guessing this is a test case or a test event, and they might, that would be a fun way to introduce themed stuff for seasonal events. And you know, Halloween is coming fairly soon, and getting the skins only by buying them or through loot boxes, you know, buying them with in-game credit or through loot boxes was a bit it has become known, but now we could have this for seasonal events as well, and so it gets you something to strive for that you have an understanding of how it's going to work and what you're going to get. So I kind of like that aspect of it as well. So I hope they use that again.
Yeah, that's a really good point. That's something they could definitely do to not just enhance like the existing events, like an upcoming like the Dr. Junkenstein event. I'm probably getting the name wrong. Junkenstein's Revenge for Halloween, but also you could use that to like bridge the gap between major events too, just to have like a little, you know, a few spray unlocks or something like that to keep players happy.
That's true. And the other thing is that the Overwatch, what is it? Watch Point, I think, the weekly show for the Overwatch League is going to be going to Twitter and other places. They've tested it during season one. I think it's a little bit, at least I watched it a few times in the beginning of the season, it felt a little bit too TV-y. Maybe they've changed it, or maybe they will change it for the season two. But I really like the idea, and I've been talking about this since the early days of me talking about Overwatch on my previous show on Overwatchers and others. I really like the idea of having one summary of what's been happening in the league, or in esports in general, but in this case in the league, that is easy to catch, not too long, and that I can keep up with. So I like the idea of Watchpoint, and I like that they're expanding it. And I hope it becomes at least there's a part that is really a summary that is easy to understand, even if you haven't watched that week of Overwatch League. So I really like that idea. And I think that is about it. We've done it. We've gone through another show of the Icy Veins podcast. Thank you so much for staying with us. Before we part, of course, I will give Stan and Aleko an opportunity to tell us where we can hear more or read more of their beautiful words. Aleko, what about you?
All right, you could find me over on Twitter at @Aleko_P. And of course, you can find me over mostly in the Hearthstone section on Icy Veins. I've been working on mostly deck guides recently. So if you would like to learn how to play any of these fine decks in the metagame, including Quest Rogue, I did write the Quest Rogue guide.
You went to the other side, Aleko. You sold your soul to the giggling inventor.
Hey, to be fair, when I wrote that guide, it still wasn't cool yet.
So it was coming up.
It was like the first week or two of the new metagame. So I wasn't. Fair it enough. Wasn't.
You liked it before it was
the hotness.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right. Very cool. And Stan, what about yourself, sir?
So you can find me on Twitter at @HeroesPawn or on the website covering news from Blizzard Games.
Excellent. With your usual enthusiasm, I'm always happy to hear it. Cool. For me, it's Not Patrick on Twitter and on Facebook and on Instagram. And if you enjoy games and you like games beyond the Blizzard universe, you might enjoy my show about gaming in general. It's called Pixels. You can subscribe to it on your podcast app right now. You just go to Add a Podcast and search for Pixels. It's got a beautiful pinkish logo, so you can subscribe there. And there are so many games coming up in these next few weeks that I'm sure you're going to find something you enjoy. I talked about Dragon Quest XI in the latest one. We talked about a bunch of things. And next one, we're going to talk about Spider-Man. So if you own a PS4, I'm sure you're interested in that game, or maybe you are. So Pixels is the name of that show. And of course, ic-veins.com for all of your guides and talent builds and all of these that you already know. And of course, the news section as well, where you can find all of the news for all of these games we're talking about. So go check that out if you haven't already. Thank you for listening, and we'll be back in a couple of weeks. Bye.
Bye.
Bye, everybody.